Hey, everybody. Happy Sunday. My conversation with Riley Gaines from Dream City Church. Great conversation about biology, truth, scripture, men in female sports, and more. Become a member today at members.charliekirk.com. That is members.charliekirk.com. When you become a member, you get exclusive benefits. You can even come on the program. So become a member today, members.charliekirk.com. Get involved with the most important organization in America, Turning Point USA, at tpusa.com. That is tpusa.com. Start a high school or college chapter today at tpusa.com. I want to say thank you to Alan Jackson Ministries for partnering with our faith episodes. We love partnering with you. Go to alanjackson.com. That's alanjackson.com. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Noble Gold Investments is the official gold sponsor of the Charlie Kirk Show, a company that specializes in gold IRAs and physical delivery of precious metals. Learn how you could protect your wealth with Noble Gold Investments at NobleGoldInvestments.com. That is NobleGoldInvestments.com. It's where I buy all of my gold. Go to NobleGoldInvestments.com.
Thank you, everybody. Please take a seat. Thank you. Luke, thank you for that wonderful introduction and honor to be here, guys, back at Dream Conference. And we have a real fun night in store with you. What we're going to do tonight is show you what we do every single month here at Dream City Church. I believe the church needs to do more in the public square. The church needs to be more vocal, not more muted. The church needs to stand strong, not just stand alongside and hope that things get better and get engaged in the public square. So here at Dream City Church, thanks to the Barnetts, thanks to the amazing team here, every month we bring top speakers and we talk about the issues you're not supposed to talk about in church. You see, there is a view, and I believe a heresy that is growing in America and in the American church, that the American church should be compartmentalized in what it does. You hear this from some pastors. They'll say, we only do, and that's not true. If you say we only do it, you're already self-defeating what the church should be doing as the Bible articulates. Oh, we only do the gospel. Okay, so how do you answer the question? As a senior pastor, if you only do the gospel, which means it's translation of we only do things that are not controversial, how do you answer, senior pastor, when a mom comes to you sobbing, saying, my 11-year-old daughter thinks she's a boy? Do you turn her around and say, we only do the gospel around here? Sorry. Do you say, well, you should get drugs because that's what the doctors say, right? Get yourself chemically castrated. No, at some point, you as a senior pastor have to declare and speak truth to your congregation. And you can avoid that by saying we only do the non-controversial things. But what happens when the people that you are leading bring you issues that you've been avoiding? How do you answer that? You say, oh, well, you know, of course you do the obligatory things. We're going to pray for her. We're going to counsel her. But when the rubber hits the road and they see that their senior pastor is not giving them guidance, they'll go find a secular institution. And we wonder why the church is not having the attendance numbers that it should more broadly. It's because during those moments of truth, parents and people in crisis are begging their pastors to give them moral guidance that is biblical in nature, but not be endorsed by the spirit of the times. And instead, far too often, pastors are afraid that they might be canceled on social media for saying something that might be politically incorrect. What only matters is if you are biblically correct. Who cares if you are politically correct? And so what we do here at Freedom Night, it's been this amazing partnership, is we'll have the conversations you're not supposed to have. And this has really helped transform our state. This is helping shape city councils. It is helping young activists in high schools. It is helping people that are searching for what do I do next when it comes to these issues. And it's everything from apologetics to politics, from government to civics, to what does the Bible say about this? Now, to be very clear, if your senior pastor is doing their job, and if you are a senior pastor, of course, politics should not be the only thing you're talking about. But it should be one of the things that you're talking about. It should be because the Bible also talks about it. And if you want to sidestep it because you've been told the church doesn't do it, then you're a new type of pastor that America actually has not had in the past. We were founded by activist pastors. Our country was started by pastors that were willing to speak about freedom and liberty. Billy Graham was explicitly political, saying that communism was Satan's religion. How many pastors would be willing to say that today? But because of the 1980s and 90s and a new form of Christianity started to grow, that's why I love Dream City so much, is because they reject this. They said, all we care about is growth. All we care about is growth. And growth is important, but if you don't have a foundation, then that growth is nothing. It's a Potemkin village. And by the way, what are you growing in? Are you growing in converts or are you growing in disciples? Because the Bible says create disciples of all nations, not just converts of all nations. And discipleship requires you to go deep, not just wide. And so what we've tried to do, and it's been this amazing journey together, is unafraidedly bring forward these issues where we'll have a guest, and tonight we have a great one, and then we open it up for questions. Well, you can ask anything. We go into the tough stuff. And if you want more resources, you can get that. And think about it. This is what makes sense. This is what Christ wanted the church to be, which is, of course, to, you know, clothe the sick and to feed the hungry and to help the poor and to minister to marriages that need them and to go into prisons for people that need to hear the gospel and all the sorts of amazing things that churches are accustomed to do. However, if we are not salt and light, which means getting outside of your doors and going into the world that needs you, what does salt and light do? What do they have in common? They change the environments that they come in contact with. If your church looks a lot more like a secular institution and you are not trying to change the secular world, then you're not being salt and light. You're being conformist and you are basically saying, I just don't want to offend the other people. Now, here's the other argument. They'll say, but we must be sensitive to those that are seeking. I can speak from authority on this because I go to college campuses where you're not allowed to talk about any of this stuff. And I'm not saying this in a braggadocious way. You guys know my heart. I'm not saying this in a prideful way. Can you show me a Christian organization that can show up on a campus in 48 hours notice and get 2,000 kids there at a drop of a hat to talk about abortion, homosexuality, transgenderism, heaven, hell, sin, and the controversial issues of this time? And let me tell you why they come. They come because they know Charlie's gonna hold nothing back. They don't come because it's seeker-sensitive time at University of Arizona. The truth is what they want to hear because they've had nothing but watered down lies their entire life. And it cuts straight forward to them and they want it and they desire it and they thirst for it and they say more. And yes, a couple of people might be momentarily offended and I'm not there to offend them, but if the truth offends them, that's their problem, not mine. And we say all these things in love and grace, but when somebody, for example, shows up on campus and it's a man masquerading as a woman, I'm not gonna call that individual she. I refuse to lie because we as Christians should not lie. I'm not gonna use the pronouns of their choosing like some of the Christian ministries say today. Well, you should try to use the pronouns as they see fit. It's a bunch of nonsense. You guys know that. No, you should speak the truth in love. By the way, God did not make a mistake when he designed every single one of us, male or female. That's not a mistake upon your design. And so, what I'm getting at is that I think this overemphasis on seeker sensitivity has led us to believe that everyone's gonna march out of your church if you dare engage on these topics. Now, as a subpoint, if they all march out of your church and you're speaking truth, blessed are you who stands for truth, even though the world might not wanna stand alongside of you. So that's not a premise I even agree with. However, it's even easier than that. The churches that are growing like crazy, and look at this crowd here tonight, the churches that are having parking problems like Pastor Jurgen are the ones that are willing to contest for righteousness and the ones that are willing to say male and female, that abortion is murder, and willing to say that we should have a border, and willing to say that, willing to say that no Christian should ever vote for the American Democrat Party. Sorry, I had to say that. But anyway, and by the way, if that bothers you, then you got to come up to the mic later and tell me why a Christian should vote for the party that wants post-abortion murder, transgenderism, chemical castration, kidnapping our kids, the abolition of the American family, the destruction of the American education system, all the while saying that they're for tolerance, diversity, and peace. Those are not Christian values. They're antithetical to Christian values. Anyway, so the point being is we have to rethink what the church actually is. The church is not a place to come and feel good about yourself. That can happen along the way. This is where I got in this debate recently with a pastor. He said, but Charlie, what you're talking about, it's really against this idea of affirming people that come to church. Of course it is. What about Christianity is about affirmation? It's about realizing that we are nothing and we need the cross, that we are sinners and we need Jesus. It's not about affirming where you are. It's about realizing that we can't possibly live up to God's perfect standards that he has for our life. It's not about being affirmed and telling how great you are. It's about going through metaphorical spiritual surgery and going through the difficult times for a pastor to point out, no, you're not doing this right, this right, this right, this right. By the way, there's a God who loves you. He sent his son on a rescue mission. Let's make sure you give your life to Christ and we live like Christ in all that we possibly can. That's what the church used to be and what it should be, because everyone says, and I'll close with this, then we'll invite Riley on here. The number one question I get from people is, Charlie, when are we gonna see revival, 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 revival? I see little pockets of it, but there's what everyone is missing is the necessary but tough cough syrup that you need to take to get to revival. There's only one thing that can lead to revival, and the scriptures tell us. You cannot get to revival if you don't have repentance. And repentance requires to believe that there's a God who doesn't just love you, but he judges you as well. And there's a way he wants you to live. And then you say, oh my goodness, for those, it says in 2 Chronicles, those people that turn their face to me. And that means that you must understand that I am not God. He designed us to live a certain way. We're falling short of his wishes and our commands. And out of repentance, then you get revival. You see, we want all the sweet stuff without any of the hard stuff. We want millions of people to give their life to Christ saying, I'm saved. And then you ask them, what are you saved from? How can you possibly give someone, tell them to give their life to Christ if they don't know about sin? Why do you need a savior if you don't talk about sin? You don't. Jesus is just like Buddha, or he's just like, you know, eat, pray, love, or any of the other kind of Eastern meditative things that they're talking about in the modern day. No, it's not that Jesus just had good ideas or he was a philosopher or worthy of studying. It's that he saves you from your wretched, depraved self so that you can live forever. And you only know that if you talk about the nature of man. So with that, we're going to get into all that tonight. And I just want to thank Dream City for allowing us to have this. This has been 4 years in May that we've been doing this. It's been well over, I think, 40 of them that we've done, right? Joe, 35 to 40. They have been seen over a billion times on social media. And here's the call to action. Your church should be doing this once a month. You can call it Freedom Night, you can call it Liberty Night. I don't care what you call it. But once a month, you should be having the type of conversations that push the boundaries of what a church normally in the American context should do through a biblical lens, where people can ask questions Socratically, the same way that Christ our Lord did, say, come on up here and tell us what you believe. And we're gonna talk about it biblically. I can tell you, we started with a small little group at Freedom Night, and now we have standing room only. And tonight we have an amazing guest that embodies, I think it's one of the first times we're inviting somebody back to Freedom Night, who embodies the kind of courageous spirit. She was an NCAA championship athlete. She did not do any TV interviews. She wasn't seeking fame. She wanted to be the best of her craft. And because the church was largely silent and we punted on the issue, a biological man masquerading as a woman with camouflage on all of a sudden came in and stole a national championship from her. The NCAA was cowardly. Pastors in local area wouldn't touch it. And she decided to have this singular focus issue saying, no, men should not be in female sports, period. And she has done more advocacy on this topic than any other person. And it really goes to show that God can use anybody for a greater purpose. You focus on one thing that is rooted in scripture, one thing God's design. We are not going to compromise on the singular thing. Understand, 5 years ago, people were afraid to even talk about the trans thing. They were like, oh my goodness, it's a new civil right. And slowly but surely, the truth teller started to demonstrate the demonic, confused nature of the trans movement, of how it's corrupting our children, how it is making sure that they'll never have, you know, livelihoods or futures, how it's eliminating female sports. And we crawled out of it, and Riley traveled the country and speaking and did tons of Turning Point USA events. And it wasn't necessarily a straight line. A lot of people had their eyes opened. Do you know that biological men have stolen 900 awards and state championships that we know of from women in just the last couple of years? 900. They'll tell you that it doesn't happen. 900 times it has happened. And here's the coolest kind of crescendo and this culmination of it all. President Donald Trump ran on this issue and won on this issue. issue. And then a couple weeks ago, he signed an executive order saying that only men in men's sports and women in women's sports. And it's because of our next guest. Join me in welcoming Riley Gaines, everybody. Riley, welcome back.
Man, I am thrilled to be back. I really am. What a revitalizing experience. And I don't use that word lightly. Maybe the intention is for us to inspire you all, but really it is this that inspires me.
So Riley, walk us through what happened at the White House a couple weeks ago, the significance of this, the work that went into it, and just the incredible accomplishment.
Yeah, it was a pretty amazing experience, of course. I just feel totally vindicated. The past 3 years for me personally, and I recognize there are women, people who have fought much longer than I have, but since that national championships in 2022, where I really took that first initial leap of faith and decided to speak out, these past 3 years under the previous administration, we as female athletes, we as women, again, as people, Americans, we were stonewalled. We were ignored. Actually, worse than that, not only did we not have a seat at the table as women, but we were reprimanded if we even dared to oppose the agenda that they were pushing. So to now finally see movement, to see a president with the moral clarity and the swiftness and the decisive action, taking time out of his day, I can't believe it. A president has to take time out of his day to issue an executive order declaring no men and women's sports. But it was amazing, especially to see the visual of all of those little girls. I'm sure several of you saw it, the clips or maybe the picture. I mean, these are 5-6-year-old girls who are surrounded by President Trump, wearing their uniforms, wearing their big bows in their hair that they wear on the soccer field all around him. And I'll tell you all, I guess, a quick Trump story. We had a briefing before he signed this executive order. And of course, Secret Service told him, you know, President, when you sign this, make sure you don't call anyone up with you. It's a security breach. And he looks at them and he says, oh, shut up. I'm going to do what I want. And when he signed it, but I think the visual, again, of having all of those little girls there with these joyous, beaming smiles on their faces, I think that is one of the most iconic images that could possibly come out of his presidency. And that's saying a lot considering this man has a mugshot.
The battle between good and evil seems to be escalating. It is easy to blame politicians, government, or poor leadership, but behind all of that is a spiritual battle. Pastor Alan Jackson's new book, Angels, Demons, and You, talk about the reality of this battle and the spiritual realm that exists around us. It has a real impact on us every day. As you read, you will discover that angels and demons are not imaginary, they actually exist. You can find them playing a variety of roles throughout the Bible, and they're still influencing the world today. We don't need to be afraid, but we do need to be aware and prepared. Angels, Demons, and You provides valuable insight, practical tools, and biblical truth to help you recognize the spiritual battle around us and become a difference maker in our generation. Get your copy today at alanjackson.com/angels. Hear from people whose faith directly impacts our culture on Pastor Alan's Culture and Christianity podcast. Find it wherever you get your podcasts.
So in addition to that, Riley, you touched on this. Why does a president even need to do this? This has become a controversial issue for no good reason whatsoever, but it stems out of the trans issue. But let's kind of take a step back and further reinforce this. Not only does Trump have to take time to sign this, he now needs to use precious resources of his Solicitor General and the Department of Justice to fight this. So in a lesser reported story that happened last week, Trump hosted all of the governors of the country that would come, and they all came to the White House. They were having a dialogue. And President Trump was saying, okay, as you know, we signed the No Men and Women's Sports Executive Order. And he's like, oh, is the governor of Maine here? Because Trump is very smart. He watches the news. You might have known that right after Trump signed the executive order, Maine decided to defy it and ignore it. And a biological man won, I think, a pole vaulting competition, state championship, robbing a woman. Now, this is where people say, well, Charlie, you have to have compassion. Look, I have love for all people. However, the action of cheating is not something I have compassion for. This self-indulgent narcissist would have placed 11th in the men's division, but wins nearly a state record in the female division and wins a title, and all these other girls are second, third, or fourth and are displaced because of it. The governor of Maine says this is trans progress, this is wonderful, and then Donald Trump tells his, goes back and forth, and basically the governor of Maine then says, we'll see you in court, taunting the president. Everybody, this fight is not over. What Riley has done is we've brought it to the top level of the White House, but you have a governor of a state publicly saying, I'm going to fight you on this to make sure men keep on stealing medals from women. Riley.
Yeah, it's amazing to me. He told this governor, he said, look, you will comply with federal law. She says, no, we won't. We do comply with federal law. I thought his answer was perfect. He says, no, you don't. We are the federal law, and you're not complying. Therefore, we will withhold federal funding. To which that's when the governor says, look, we'll see you in court. And he says, I look forward to seeing you there. He takes like a deep breath, and he continues on, and he says, look, enjoy your life after, governor, because there's not a spot for you in elected politics after this. But let it be known what she is sacrificing to allow men and boys to trample on girls and women. Over $5 billion in federal funding. Maine is a small state. I mean, a very small population.
Maybe, and poor. It's a very poor state. Sorry
maybe,
to interrupt.
Maybe 1.4, 1.5 million people. They cannot survive without federal funding. But this Maine governor is willing to risk it all, again, to ensure that boys can trample on girls. And it has many people scratching their heads, right? We're asking ourselves the question of why. I was so surprised. I really was after November 5th. I truly believe that Democrats, whether it was, you know, in terms of elected representation at all levels or certainly the media and how they portray this issue, I really believed that they were slowly going to start to recant, that they were going to distance themselves from their voting records. And that is not at all what they have done. They have doubled down on this issue. And you mentioned this issue is a controversial issue. It's really not. It's not amongst the people. It's a unifying issue that was made very clear on November 5th. So while I believe people turned out to the polls, of course, to embrace Donald Trump, of course, to embrace his cabinet picks, to embrace the America First agenda, I believe more so that people turned out to the polls to reject absurdity. And that's what the Democratic Party has become entirely and thoroughly from top to bottom, whether it is men and women's sports, whether it is putting tampons in boys' bathrooms, whether it is referring to Latino individuals as Latinx, that they've lost the ability to communicate with your everyday common sense American who intuitively knows that men and women are different. They're so out of touch with reality.
And there's another one. So as you know, I got this from Matt Walsh, but I go on campuses and ask a lot of questions, and I ask, what is a woman? And, you know, it goes viral. And so now they have an answer. This is the latest one. The governor of Wisconsin, by the way, this is what happens if a church is silent. You're seeing a compare and contrast. If the church is active, we get righteousness, we get Donald Trump. Church is silent, you get Wisconsin, you get Maine. By the way, Maine is also one of the least churched states in the country.
Right.
Top five. So it's Oregon, Vermont, Maine. So you can have a direct correlation, a one-to-one of the least churched and the craziest ideas.
Right.
Of course, right. Obviously. Because where are people going to get meaning? They will get it out of politics. They'll get out of secular humanism. They'll get out of materialism. They'll get out of postmodernism. Man will do whatever is right in his own eyes, as the scriptures will say. And so there's a direct correlation. So Wisconsin has now referred to women. They have changed it in their health guidelines to inseminated persons. Mothers to inseminated persons, yeah. So for mothers to inseminated persons. You're right, Jürgen, yeah.
When I first read this, like, immediately I had so many questions. What are they calling fathers, right? Like inseminators? I don't know. Like, what are they calling grandmothers? Grand inseminated persons? Does Governor Evers not believe that stepmothers are moms? Does he not believe that adopted moms are moms? These are all questions that immediately popped into my head upon reading this. And so I want to tell you, we hear what the left says. Actually, typically they don't have an answer for the question of what is a woman. Charlie can attest. It's this always a circular reasoning, right? A woman is a woman. That's what it is. They don't have an answer. But I do want to tell you how to answer this, because President Trump just signed a beautifully and thoroughly written executive order declaring there are only two sexes. And how he goes on to define woman in this executive order is adult human female. And then it further goes on to define female as someone who does have, should have, or will have the capability to produce ova or eggs. That is by far the most holistic, comprehensive definition of the word woman. So now you know.
And so let's go even further into the trans. So this is what's really important, is that the no men and women sports, we are winning on this and we're going to win. And the Democrats are on the wrong side of this issue politically and morally. But it is only a symptom, no different than fever is a symptom of COVID, of a different underlying issue. And that is the trans issue, which, of course, is a symptom of a spiritual issue. But let's zero in on the trans issue. Because what I find is that some people are comfortable, of course, saying, yeah, you know, no men and women sports. But they get a little shaky if you talk about outlawing the surgical removal of breasts for a 14-year-old or the forbidding of chemical castration drugs for a 16-year-old. Understand, that is only one symptom of an entire trans industry that has captured our public school system, our mass media, our medical infrastructure, and major portions of our government. The entire trans movement is at odds with God's design for us in more ways than you might realize. Of course, it's the obvious of the distinction between male and female. But at the fundamental promise of transgenderism is that the will of man can triumph over nature. That is the unspoken subtlety that Christians need to lean in on. That just because they won't say you were made, but you are a certain way. We believe you are designed. But if you want to change that, you totally can. Through drugs, through surgery. What they're saying is that the will of man is sovereign over all. That is a direct contention against everything that we as Christians believe in. Riley, speak about this.
The thing is, I think the other side understands that and is willing to admit that. And that's the problem, right? You're right. It goes back to the first book. Of course, we can speak about this all day long from an objective standpoint, from the standpoint of biological reality, understanding that men punch 60% harder. Of course, they throw further, they run faster, they can jump higher. We can talk about that all day long. But to your point, more importantly, is what it says in the Bible. It goes back to the first book. He created them male and female intentionally and uniquely in his perfect image. And to deny that or to attempt to alter that is to deny God. It's as simple as that. And the other side, I don't even think they have a problem admitting that anymore. They understand and they're totally okay with the thought of themselves being their own God, which I think is the scary part, and definitely, like you're referring to, it's the root of the problem.
Yeah, and I think that this is of course, it's a spiritual sickness. But to go even a step further, transgenderism and the whole movement is where we lost and we got silent as a church on the homosexuality issue.
Right.
So, again, this is where I win no friends, but I don't care, right? You're all my friends. So, which is that homosexuality is a behavior. It is not an identity. And we can acknowledge, of course, and we should have long suffering and patience and compassion for someone that deals with the temptation to engage in that behavior. But we should reject the premise that that is who you are. And it's so important, because as soon as you yield the terrain or the ground that your identity is in sin, well, then you can't even say it's irreversible, it's interlocked, it's who you are, there's nothing I can do. Well, then, you, of course, you say, they use the same language. The same way that I say that I'm gay or lesbian, I'm a man or I'm a woman, because that's my identity. You see, one pairs with the other. And we must understand that God's design for us is not a mistake. It's intentional. It's for our purpose. And everybody struggles with something. Now, the trans movement is, it would be one thing, and I'm sure all of you guys agree with this. I wouldn't say it was right or biblical or moral if a grown dude showed up, you know, wearing a dress. I would kind of look at him weird, but I, you know, would say, hey, do you need Jesus? You probably do. Like, that'd be about it, right? That has been around for everybody's life, right, Pastor Tommy? I mean, for as long as you guys have been around, there's been kind of the one-off guy that's a guy that wore a dress. That's not the issue here. What, of course, is the issue is that, well, it's three things. Number one, they want to come to our kids and they get into our curriculum. That's big. But it's even more than that. It's by force and threatening and extortion, you must call him a woman. So then he bothers you. So you're watching the church service, then he'll come up, hey, you know I'm a woman, right? You must call me a woman. I thought we were minding our own business. It's not live and let live. The trans people say live and let us rule and rule over you. How have you been treated by the trans jihadists, Riley?
Oh, gosh. We could spend the rest of our allotted time talking about this. I will say it's remarkable the shift that we have seen, again, when you compare now to 3 years ago. And that's across every realm of society, right? Even on you know, watching the football field, you've got people like Nick Bosa out there doing the little Trump dance. That couldn't have happened 3 years ago. He was fined over $11,000 for wearing a MAGA hat. They told him, they asked him, you know, do you regret this? He said, no, I would do it again. The next day he gets out there and does that little dance. And while that dance might seem silly, it might seem like it's, you know, just a silly little movement celebration. No, that dance represents a whole lot. It represents free speech. It represents how cancel culture is losing its grip. It represents patriotism that I believe people have been desperate for. But to answer your question, All that to attest to the shift that we have seen, and certainly since November 5th, and even more so since January 20th, I compare that to 3 years ago. Let me just tell you actually what my university did to me. Take you back to 2021, 2022. I will never forget when we learned of who Will Thomas was, when we learned he was going to be competing in the pool with us, when we learned he was going to be sharing a locker room with us. My whole team opposed this. Right? My team of 40 girls, none of us thought this was fair or safe or righteous or moral or just by any means. But our university, they sat us down in a room. We had to do restorative justice circles. We had to go to verbatim these educational meetings where we weren't allowed to leave until verbatim they felt like we had been properly re-educated. We were told, you're going to lose all of your friends if you speak out about this. You know, lifelong friends, friends you've had for forever, they're not going to want to talk to you anymore. They said, Riley, you know, your plan is dental school after college? Well, you'll never get in. No dental school will ever even look at your application if you speak up about this, because they're going to see that you're a transphobe. And if you want a job after college, forget it. It's standard practice for an employer to look up their candidates for their job, and they will never hire you. You know, Riley, you signed that scholarship and you did it willingly. And when you did, you gave away your rights to speak in your own personal capacity. Remember who you represent, whose name is across your chest and across your cap, because it's not yours. It's ours. And understand, we have already taken your stance for you. I will never forget when they sat us down as a team. They brought in an outside professional, whatever that means. I don't know what qualifications you need for this job. But she sat us down and she said, what it sounds like you're advocating for is segregation. And do you remember how America treated African Americans? Is that the side of history you want to be on? You know who else advocated for segregation? The KKK. That is who you are linking yourself to if you oppose undressing next to a man. They told us point blank outright that we would be equivalent to murderers because we would have blood on our hands. And they would follow it with, and you don't want that. You don't want to be a murderer, do you? No, so I suggest you be kind. And I suggest you be inclusive. And believe it or not, that is effective. That works. Telling girls they're going to be racist murderers if they defend themselves, or God forbid, they're people like my younger sister. It's emotional blackmail. But when you're talking to 18, 19, 20-year-old girls, they knew what they were doing.
Private student loan debt in the U.S. totals about $300 billion. About $45 billion of that is labeled as distressed. Why Refi refinances distressed or defaulted private student loans that others will not touch? Why Refi does not care what your credit score is when the payment on your distressed or defaulted private student loan is so big, you guys should check it out. It may not be available in all states. Go to whyrefi.com, call 888-YREFI34 or log on to whyrefi.com. Why Refi offers a 3-minute rate check without any credit impact. That is YREFY.com. Do you have a co-borrower? Why Refi can get them released from the loan. You can give mom or dad a needed and earned break. Go to YREFI.com. Because of private student loan debt, so many Americans feel stuck and helpless. So go to YREFI.com. That is YREFY.com. Can you imagine being debt-free and not living under this burden anymore? Go to YREFI.com. YREFY.com.
But to speak more specifically to the trans activists, it was actually at a turning point event at San Francisco State University, where I went there to share my message. Again, nothing even really opinionated. It was at that point, I mean, I pretty much only spoke to my lived experience. And it was a classroom setting, so, you know, a podium at the front, seats out in the audience, like a whiteboard behind me. And upon delivering my message, a group of protesters rush in. They turn off the lights, hundreds of them. They turn off the lights to the room, so it's pitch black. And they ambush me, like I'm fully accosted. I'm being pushed. I'm being shoved. I'm being, like, punched in the face by these men wearing dresses, which, fortunately for me, their punches don't hurt that bad. But nonetheless, these protesters ended up barricading me in a room and holding me for ransom for about, I mean, almost 5 hours, demanding that if I wanted to make it back home to see my family safely again, I had to pay them money. You might be wondering, where were the police? We were in San Francisco, so the police were being held for ransom with me. Hour three in this room, right? I'm looking at them. Can't you do something? Isn't it actually your job to do something? To which they outright said no. No, we can't do anything. We're not allowed to do anything because we're not allowed to be seen as anything other than an ally to that community, or else we'll lose our jobs. Again, the same community who's on the other side of the door calling these officers racist pigs for protecting a white girl like me. Anyways, it's about midnight at this point, the middle of the night, and the dean of students shows up and starts negotiating with the students how much I owe each of them to be able to leave, which the price they agreed upon was $10 each, which makes me mad because I think I'm worth more than $10. Eventually, we were able to get out of that room, but not because the protesters dispersed or were letting up, decided to go home. No, however many officers had to form a diamond around me, we pushed out. But the most remarkable part about this story is what happened the next day when the vice president of student affairs at the university sent out a university-wide email. So to all faculty, all staff, the entire student body. And in this email, she said, "We are so proud of our brave students for handling Riley Gaines in the manner that they did. We know how deeply traumatic her presence is on this campus. And so here's some counseling resources for you all. You know, take the day off of school. Just know that we see you, we love you, we hear you, and we stand with you." No mention of course, the condemnation of violence against women for that matter. No mention of the value in upholding free speech. No, of course not. I could tell story after story after story of being spit on, of people throwing glass bottles at me, pouring drinks on me for hours. But again, that shift that we've seen, to be very clear, from the beginning, the support has been tenfold compared to the negative. But you compare 3 years ago to now, a lot of the support at the beginning was in privacy or in secrecy or in direct messages or done through winks or whispers. That has totally shifted now. People are so much more bold in saying men cannot become women.
So last thing I want to talk about, then I want to do some questions and open mic. Riley, there's a lot of ministry leaders, a lot of pastors here in the audience. How should they respond when they encounter, let's just keep it under 18, okay? Someone that says that, let's say it's a 15-year-old who says they're a boy or vice versa. You have become kind of an unofficial expert on this, just kind of baptism by fire. How should a pastor, how should a youth leader, how should a worship leader, how should a mom, how should a volunteer encounter this topic in a Christ-like, grace-filled, truth-centric, biblical way?
Well, precisely like Jesus did. I did for a long time. I knew Jesus, of course, was filled with grace, and I knew he was filled with truth, but I believed in my mind he was 50% grace and 50% truth. That is not the truth. He is 100% grace and 100% truth at all times. Let's actually compare something like the bishop that we saw. Bishop is a stretch. That service that President Trump got walked into, I believe whoever walked him into that service deserves to lose their job. But did you see the female bishop who was very, very quick to speak of God's grace, like any progressive pastor is? Admittedly, as a Christian, there wasn't a whole lot she said that I disagreed with, from the standpoint of understanding and knowing that we have a God who loves all. But what that bishop left out, what our culture tends to leave out, but what the Bible does not leave out, is what happens next in the story. I think of stories like 1 John, right? The adulterous woman who is sentenced to be stoned, and the soldiers appear, they're ready to throw, and Jesus shows up and he says, you know, those without sin cast the first stone. That is his perfect display of grace, 100% grace. But again, what the He Gets Us commercial. Did you watch that during the Super Bowl?
What an awful thing that has been. I'll go on about that later.
They depict people washing the feet of sinners, these Christ-like figures washing the feet of sinners outside of Planned Parenthoods or abortion clinics. Again, that is biblically accurate. But you know what the commercial left out? You know what the bishop left out? What our culture tends to leave out is what happens next. Because then Jesus says, now go and sin no more. And as Christians, that is how we are called to lead. And admittedly, I struggle with the grace portion. It's hard for me to sometimes put myself in another person's shoes, especially on a topic so simple like this one. So I understand there are certainly ways that I can grow, that I can mature in my relationship with Christ. But that is how we should respond as Christians.
Also, I just want to reiterate, you guys, we got to bring this energy back to your churches. This needs to be a grassroots movement to your churches. And
yes.
If your church refuses to engage on these things, you need to lovingly challenge the pastor. And if they do not adjust or react, find a new church. Vote with your feet. Yes, ma'am. Let's go here and then we'll go from there. Yeah.
Hi, Riley. My name's Jocelyn. I attend this church. I went to the college here. Huge fan of you and the work that you've done, how you've been standing out, and also just your faith journey has been really inspiring. My question is for you specifically, and Charlie, you both had said that you guys are on the winning side, and we're on the winning side of this trans issue, and that it's looking up. But what are your future plans to continue advocating for women and girls in sports and continue fighting for them?
I love this question because it gives me the opportunity to address something that I don't believe we've said. The war on woke, let it be known, the war on woke has not been won, okay? We are certainly making strides. We are making, of course, taking those steps in the right direction. And now we have the ability, finally, to make lasting change. But this is just the tip of the iceberg, what we are uncovering and what we are unraveling. So to answer your question, and it's important that we don't become complacent. That's why the other side, I think of in my adult life, right, 12 of the past 16 years leading up to January 20th has been under Democratic leadership. The other side, they are relentless. They do not roll over. They do not allow themselves to be steamrolled. That's how they have acquired every inch of the public square. And honestly, it's pretty admirable. I'll say it. I think we could take a page from their playbook there. All that to say, there's still more work to be done. Number one, that's kind of at the forefront of my mind right now, pertaining to this issue in particular, with President Trump signing this executive order, number one, it does not absolve states from passing legislation. That's crucial. And number two, realizing that this executive order, in 4 years, God forbid, someone like AOC or Andy Beshear or whoever else the Democrats put up, I don't think they're stupid enough to put Kamala Harris up again. Yet they continue to leave me speechless. Whoever they put up, let's say a Democrat gets into office in 4 years, they will undo this executive order as quickly as it was put in place. So we need this to pass through both legislative chambers in the House or in Congress. It has already passed the House. It has yet to be heard on the Senate floor. So there's definitely a push there. And this NCAA policy that NCAA President Charlie Baker put out following President Trump's executive order. This policy, he was very quick to release a statement saying, we're going to create a policy that falls in line with the EO. The policy that he put in place is in direct conflict with the executive order. But I believe, truthfully, President Trump has a bad advisor in this because he's been quick to applaud the NCAA. It needs to be known this NCAA policy would still very much allow that man at San Jose State University who played on the women's volleyball team, it would very much still allow him a spot on that team, playing with those girls in the locker room, all the things, because he changed his birth certificate. So there's still a ton of work to be done on this issue in particular. And of course, that goes across all of the cultural chaos that has plagued this nation.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Sorry. And any of you guys can come and ask questions and line up. Yes, sir.
All right. I just want to say I'm a senior pastor for a church in Southern Utah, and we stand with you. Without a doubt. I'm supposed to ask you a question, but that's what I came up to tell you. My question is, how has this helped you in your walk with Jesus?
Well, it's amazing because I've always been a Christian. We were one of those families that grew up in the Bible Belt where it was church every Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night. And me and my siblings, we were the youngest one in the congregation by about 80 years, okay? So, like, the amount of, like, little visitor cards that me and my siblings played tic-tac-toe, hangman, anything we possibly could to distract us from, like, our pastor who was heel-clicking on the stage is definitely ungodly. All that to say, I had the foundation, but I didn't get to really learn and experience and feel for myself until I was negatively impacted by this movement. I thought I knew the Lord. I really did. I trusted him. I obeyed him. I spent time in scripture, but I had no idea because I hadn't been tested in the way that I was then. And how can you have a testimony if you've never been tested? And so I never... Again, as Charlie alluded to, like, this is just never where I saw myself. I was in dental school after college. That's what I prepared for. I was set to specialize in endodontics, which is root canals, weirdly enough. I had scored the highest percentile of the DAT, which is the dental admissions test. I could have gone anywhere in the country that I wanted to go, receiving tens of thousands of dollars in scholarship funds. That's what I was set to do. That's what I prepared for. I was so, so wrong in assuming that God calls those who are already prepared. I didn't take a government course before I stepped into this. I knew nothing about our government. I knew we had three branches. Didn't know what they did. I still don't really know what they do. I don't even think they know what they do, to be honest with you. My public speaking courses in college, I mean, my face would turn the color of a tomato. I was never prepared for this. But I realized pretty quickly that God doesn't call those who are prepared. He prepares those who he calls. And if he brings you to something, he'll certainly bring you through it.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is John Leggett, proud graduate of Phoenix First Pastors College, class of 2000. Hallelujah. If anyone remembers that school. James chapter 1, verse 2 says, the gentleman from Utah stole my question, actually, but Riley, he asked you, Charlie, I'm going to ask you, because you've been through a lot of tribulation. I know you're working with President Trump right now. His faith has been strengthened, matured, and made more secure. I'd like to know how and how much has it improved?
I mean, significantly. I mean, I believe after July 13th in Butler, Pennsylvania, he's a changed man. I believe that. And I have a lot of thoughts on that. Let me just say first, I believe it was divine providence that spared Donald Trump from having his brains blown out on national TV on that day. There's no convincing me otherwise. That is the equivalent of like a 5-foot putt shot in shooting terms. Donald Trump never uses PowerPoints at his MAGA rallies. You guys have been to MAGA rallies and seen them. How often does he go through PowerPoint presentations? And now you can see here this chart over there. Something spoke to him 20 minutes beforehand, and he told his team, hey, that chart we were talking about on the plane, let's get it up on the screens. They were lucky that they even had the screens, because a lot of the rallies don't even have screens. And they're like, sir, and he was insistent, like laying it down, like, sir, it's too late. No, I'm not going out there until this chart that Ron Johnson sent me is up there. It's amazing. I want everyone to see it. I want the press to see it. And there was even, sir, you want to do a PowerPoint presentation outdoors in a sunny day on July 13th in Butler, Pennsylvania? Yeah, just do it. And so then he does it. Now, about 5% of all MAGA rallies ever have had a PowerPoint. Every single time he'll get to it at the end of the speech. It'll always be towards the end. Okay, here. For whatever reason, he does his opening shtick, and 7 minutes in, he's like, by the way, where's that thing I was talking about on the plane? Get that chart up there. Now, if Donald Trump would have not called for that, he gets blown, his head gets blown off. He happened to, within a millisecond of a millimeter, I have to understand, it happened to be the right millisecond with the right millimeter type tilt that his head tilt and the bullet literally grazed his ear.
That's crazy.
And for me, it was incredible because number one, how few Christians acknowledge that was a miracle was really disappointing. I'll be honest. The church completely failed. Number two, it confirms the truth of the scriptures, which is that miracles are not enough just to get people to believe in God. It says that repeatedly. Oh, God, send me a miracle. It's like, no, it's not enough. It's not enough. I mean, you look at God's chosen people. They saw the Red Sea part, and they saw manna come from heaven and quail blown off course, and they saw the Nile turn to blood, and they're still like, who's this God, and why are we in the desert, and this Moses guy's awful, and I want to eat meat, and they're the most complaining people in the history of the ancient civilizations, right? And it hit us, like, oh my goodness, that it's not enough just to have miracles. You have to have faith, not just show. If God revealed himself to me, I would always believe in it. Actually, I don't think that's true. Because we saw it. It was the most televised miracle in history. And the church largely was, meh, couldn't care less. So Trump has said God spared his life. He has said that repeatedly. And Riley made a great point earlier. How he's exchanging with the press, how he's dealing with his adversaries. It's a different centeredness with a poise. Of course, he still does the Trump stuff that we love and that we admire, right? But there is a Trump 2.0, an anointing, an upgrade that I see on this man that I really believe is the byproduct of divine providence. And President Trump has said this privately and publicly, because he's the same person in public that he is in private. There's no hidden agenda, which is that God wanted me to keep on fighting for this country. He believes that he is on a mission from the heavens to save this country. Thank you.
If you want to make sense of the change and the chaos happening around us, you're going to need God's help. That's why Alan Jackson Ministries, a friend of mine, created the Culture and Christianity podcast, the Culture and Christianity Conference, and their weeknight news show, Alan Jackson Now. Millions of people also listen to Pastor Alan Jackson's powerful sermons each week, I do, on radio, television, satellite, and online. In today's world, there's desperate need for truth. And Alan Jackson Ministries feels a sense of urgency to deliver God's truth and a biblical perspective to anyone who will listen. We can't afford to be complacent. Their mission is to help people become more fully devoted followers of Jesus Christ, which is the most important thing, giving your life to the Lord, including here on The Charlie Kirk Show. Go to alanjackson.com/charlie. That is alanjackson.com/charlie to find recent podcasts, shows, and sermons. Be informed, find encouragement, hear the truth delivered in a way that just makes sense. You'll also find books, studies, prayers, and other tools to help you grow in your faith. Again, that's alanjackson.com/charlie, alanjackson.com/charlie. This is our time to make a difference. Check it out right now.
Charlie, my name is Brian Storman. I'm from Conway, Arkansas. What role do you... I just want to say thank you for standing up for all of us that feel like we don't have a voice. America needs more people just like you. What role do you see for faith and religious values in the public square, and how should people of different beliefs coexist in that society?
It's a great question. I'll try to keep it as short as possible. Number one, let me just say this, that there was this urge back in the summer to get really mad at Trump because he was not as pro-life as we were. You guys probably saw that. You probably even know pastors that engaged in that. And I immediately said, wait a second. Don't hold Donald Trump, who we want to become president, to a higher standard than what you hold your pastor to. So if you are allowing an everyday pastor to be silent on abortion, but you want Donald Trump to be super pro-life, he's not running for local pastor. The pastors must be held much more accountable and be much more vocal and much more outspoken on these issues. That's the first thing. Very important. So, but the second thing is this, is that one of my passion projects is to get the church to wake up out of its slumber. There are three types of churches. There are true churches like Dream City Church and many of you guys that are in the Word and teaching the Word. There are traitorous churches, ones that are completely long gone, and you know exactly what I'm talking about. They are so off the reservation. And then there, most churches are in the middle category. They are trembling. They shake like a leaf if you dare mention talking about politics, because it just they might lose a board member. We must get the trembling to become true. And if I might add, this is a second and third takeaway item for you guys. It's not enough just that you're going to go bring this to your church. Go have coffee with two pastors in your local area that are trembling and ask them specifically with no wiggle room, are they willing to follow alongside you and do these events or do associated type events? And if not, why? There is no excuse not to speak out on these issues. And pastor on pastor dialogue is how this is all going to get solved. It's not going to be Charlie Kirk talking to pastors. It's going to be pastors talking to fellow pastors. Because when I talk to a pastor, they'll always say, well, you don't know how hard it is. And in some ways, I don't. I don't know what it's like to have to preach five services, get 2 hours of sleep, then do a funeral, then have to try to save a marriage and drive across town to try to do a budget meeting. That's tough. And people are called to that. I'm called to something different. But if a pastor tells a fellow pastor, like, I do know what that's like. And you should still do it. I think that's important. Final point you make, and which is important, how can all faiths coexist? Look, the first and foremost thing, we are Judeo-Christian in nature and Christian with Judeo roots. Ethical monotheism built the West, but there's a very big problem with the growth of Muhammadism. I don't call it Islam. It's Muhammadism, which is incompatible with a free society. And I think Christians have to get quickly educated on how the Islamic republics, which believe in Mohammedan jihad across the West, are multiplying in great numbers, and they are slowly cutting the throat of a once great continent of Christian Europe. And it is not just that it's secular, it will become the Islamic Republic of Europe. And we better wise up very quickly as a church and recognize that there is a spiritual conflict that is coming right down the pike, and it is coming from the Middle East. And if we are not biblically and morally and theologically ready for it, we will be the next Europe. So that's the best answer I have to that. Thank you very much.
So my question is, first, my name. My name's Jim Bateman. I'm from Colorado City, Arizona. So my question is, it seems to me that, I guess I say this because it seems to me that we need to remain very diligent. And so my question to you, Charlie, is do you think that Christianity will always remain on the conservative side, or could corruption seep in and then eventually start to notice that the enemy has kind of taken over and then there would be a need to switch parties?
Yeah, so I don't care if Christianity is on the conservative side. I care that Christianity is on the biblical side, right? And so conservatism, properly understood, is an adherence to the natural law, which the natural law of, we would say it, is Christian principles, right? Honor your mother and father, do not murder, do not steal, you know, honor the Sabbath day and keep it holy. The natural law is unchanging. That's why we're so against transgenderism, is because it is an affront to the natural law. Conservatism, when it no longer is rooted in the natural law and it becomes neoliberalism, you get the conservative of the United Kingdom, where they stand for nothing and they're basically no different than liberals. However, this is very important, is that First Peter speaks extensively about this, of false teachings and false prophets and heresies in the church. You can cherry pick certain parts of the scriptures with no context, no grounding, no overarching narrative, and you can create a social justice political movement, and you get that bishop that you were talking about.
Or the He Gets Us commercial.
Or the He Gets Us commercial. And now let me, again, I do this every year on the He Gets Us thing. And I got, sorry, Luke, I got to do it again. Because they keep on wasting all this money on the He Gets Us thing. And it bothers me because it's so inherently narcissistic. If you understand even the deeper philosophy here, it's so narcissistic. As if, like, I'm so important and I'm the center of everything that I need a God that comes and understands me. That's the core of it, right?
It is.
That, like, the only way I'm going to pay attention is, like, yo, I'm so important. Like, I don't have time for this. And you're trying to tell me that He cares. Oh, maybe I will actually pay attention. And instead it should be like, you're nothing. You're wretched. You have a destination with eternity that's going to be quite warm. And God loved you enough to send a rescue mission to make sure that doesn't happen. So you better stop thinking about yourself and thinking about the cross. It's not that He gets us, it's He saves us.
Yes.
It's completely different. And so it just bothers me because it's so hyper-Western narcissism to see this. And they're like, well, this is how we reach young people. No, you don't reach, I reject the premise. I know how to reach young people. And these ridiculous consultants to the Green family don't. They just know how to fleece you for 10% of a $500 million ad buy. That makes Christianity look deluded and stupid. Anyway, the point being is this, is that thank you for mentioning that, Riley, we must stay vigilant and diligent because the enemy understands scripture. We know that in Matthew 4, when Jesus was tempted in the desert and the misappropriation of it. Riley, do you have something to comment on this?
No, you hit it.
Okay, great. Stay vigilant and stay diligent. Yes. We'll do two more questions. Yes.
Hi, my name is Cameron Koner. I'm a student at Arizona Christian University. And Riley, thank you for being the role model that women actually need.
Thank you.
Thank you.
My question for you is, how do we change the conversation of feminism and bring it back to what a Christian woman really is, especially for college-age students like me who've grown up being taught that an independent woman is somebody who doesn't need to be led by a man?
It's so true. If you look at these people who deem themselves feminists, women like Megan Rapinoe, women like Billie Jean King, I can even recall testifying before Congress once, and I was sat next to the president of the National Women's Law Center. This woman, in her opening testimony, what she claimed to be in defense of women, said that that women should just learn how to lose more gracefully to men. Megan Rapinoe, of course, has been the biggest traitor to her sex, I believe. People like Billie Jean King, who we have to accredit Title IX too. She played in the Battle of the Sexes and she won, and it was this huge feat for women in sports and beyond. She's now openly advocating for men to participate in women's sports, again, undermining everything that she once fought for. So you look at these people who call themselves feminists. Actually, my campus tour last year with Turning Point was labeled Reclaiming Feminism. That is not someone who fights for women. I was very hesitant to call myself a feminist at first because, again, that's my idea, my preconceived notion, and what society, our culture has enabled us to believe are that feminists are these people who believe that not only men and women are equal, but they're the same. And I, of course, reject that. We are not the same. We are created equal, of course, again, in His image, but we are not the same. So I believe as women, we need to do everything that we can do. Have the conversations. Insert yourselves in places where normally you wouldn't. And I think this is important because women typically were more empathetic and apologetic and emotionally driven. And these are wonderful things. These are what makes women wonderful mothers and sisters and wives and friends. They're great things, but they are being used against us to our detriment. That's why we are seeing this war on women. That's why they changed mother in the state statute, of course, in a 1,000-page budget bill, very sneakily. and they didn't change father. That's because they know as women, we are going to roll over and let them do this. Men would not. Men would not. Could you imagine a man? Let's use some other phrases. They've called women in medical peer-reviewed journals egg producers. Could you imagine if you went up to a man and called him a sperm producer? He wouldn't take that. He would laugh in your face and say, what did you just call me? But we as women, we sit back and we allow it. We need to start pushing back. I believe that is what femininity at least, is. And Turning Point's done a good job of saying rejecting feminism but embracing femininity. And I really like that mantra and that motto.
Yeah, I'll just add one thing to that, which is that in a truly, in a properly structured, healthy society, women should not have to rise up. Men should pick that fight, and we should go after the creeps that are redefining it. In a properly ordered society, women should not have to get involved in combat. They should not have to get involved in physical combat or in political combat. We are here to treasure women as Christ loved the church, and you protect the things you love from nastiness. So we should be the ones that go in the arena so that the women of America shouldn't have to get all metaphorically bloodied up with this. And that's what always bothered me the most. Well, the last question is, I know that your father, you know, had to be restrained, but where are these dads, these 900 times that these medals get stolen? I mean, guys, if my daughter had to go like undress around a guy, I'm going to start a prison ministry and you guys can try to bail me out.
It is so true. My dad, I come from a family of athletes. So my dad, he is an SEC Hall of Famer. He played football. He actually played with the Eagles. So we are super excited they accepted President Trump's, or at least he extended the invitation to the Eagles to the White House today. So my dad is a very big man, very strong man, at least he used to be. Now he's kind of just fat. But when I called my dad, I'll never forget this, at that national championships at Georgia Tech, we knew this man would be in the pool with us, competing with us. We found that out maybe a few weeks before, but we did not know he was going to be in the locker room with us until we were forcibly exposed and exploited and simultaneously exposed to this male. And I remember leaving that locker room immediately and, of course, calling my dad. And I said, Dad, he's in our locker room. And my dad said, Riley, you're going to come. Of course, they don't let parents or spectators from the stands, you know, come down onto the pool deck. It's reserved for only the athletes and coaches and officials. He said, Riley, I have a plan. There's a side door over here. I'm going to say I'm your university's bus driver. Let me down there now and I'll handle this myself.
And we laugh. But that's how things should be handled against creeps, yeah, and perverts and people that go after our girls. Okay, last question.
I understand going after creeps and perverts, but all over social media, I continually see mothers who are trying to redefine the sex of their babies, saying my little boy is a girl. They dress them like girls. They raise them to believe they're little girls. I know that there's legislation in the school systems against teachers speaking out at children against their true sex. But what about parents with their own children? How do we protect them from their own parents?
Yeah, I mean, that is the most difficult of all questions, so thank you for that.
Yes, sure.
And, I mean, let me start with the obvious, is that DCFS has been used against Christians,
yes,
for the last 40 years,
yes,
because they say that we're not vaccinating our kids and we're not doing all this stuff. So I'm hardly one to give teeth to DCFS. Because, you know, oh, you're not supervising your kid. There's literally a mom went to jail about 5 years ago because she let her kid, like, walk down the street to a park unsupervised. Did you guys hear about this story? It's this working mom, and she literally went to jail for 2 weeks, single mom, because she wasn't helicoptering her kid at the local playground. I mean, I would be gone for, like, a week, and my parents would be like, you know, did you leave the,
yeah,
zip code? And it's like, okay, great. And so that's a very profound question. Is it the role of the state to interfere with parents even if they are doing bad to their kids? If they're abusing their kids, yes, that is the role of the state. Is it abuse to raise a boy as a girl. That, yes, it probably is. And so does it reach to the level of that? These are very important moral questions that are unfolding in front of us. And I don't know the clear and crisp answer, but I can't think of anything more disgusting. There are women on TikTok, I'm not kidding, that are giving 18 months old puberty blockers and chemical castration agents. 18 months old. So I think at that point, that woman should go to jail and into an insane asylum, and a loving Christian family should adopt those kids. And I say that with such great hesitancy, knowing that the power of the state has been used against Christian parents for 40 years. Riley, do you have a thought on this?
No, I will agree with the sentiment that I see videos all the time on social platforms of these opportunists. I mean, I think that's the best word. These narcissistic parents who, I can't even put myself in their shoes. Of course, I don't have children yet, but I have parents. I can't even put myself in these people's shoes who are selling out their children. But worse than that, I mean, they're irreversibly harming their children their own benefit. And that's what we've seen across the board with the transgender movement. The medicalization side of things, the chemical and surgical castration of children for profit, right? That's what it all boils down to. If they weren't making money on this, they wouldn't do this. Could you imagine walking into a doctor's office and saying, don't really feel like having a right arm today. Could you cut it off? Your doctor, physician, surgeon would look at you like you're literally insane. But because they can attach a price tag to it, and we saw this, we saw it in my backyard. I live in Nashville, Tennessee. And that video of this Vanderbilt clinician who came out and said, you know, forget abortions. We can only make $200, $250 for every abortion. These are lifelong patients that we're creating. These are cash cows, $70,000 to $100,000 per procedure. And we have them for life. Just knowing all of this is being done for profit, it makes me sick. And so to see these parents who are opportunists, and that's the kindest way you could put it, is disturbing.
I think the buried lead of that is that if they weren't able to post on social media that they were doing it, I don't know if they'd be doing it. I think that it's not even that they're getting the bad ideas from social media, is that they get like a mini celebrity by, excuse the language, pimping out their toddler for medieval witchcraft practices on their TikTok and Instagram. So that's a whole nother level of dementedness that we can explore at another date. Everybody, I want to thank you guys for standing strong. Please go back to your communities and bring the Freedom Night in America concept to your town. And give it up for Riley Gaines. And Luke, please get on up here. Thank you, guys.
Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thanks so much for listening, and God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.